welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Gary Huber from the Iowa Food Cooperative. He's the general manager, and we're going to talk about sustainable, locally grown food and how that benefits animals. So Jesse Lowry, our director of research and conservation here at the zoo, is at the microphone as well. And so, Jesse, why don't you get the show started today?
Sure. Thanks, Ryan. Great to be here again today and excited to talk about the subject of local food. It's something that we have not talked about on this podcast before and directly affects the health of animals, especially animals here locally in Iowa. But of course, the mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And what we like to call the zoo is a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community and families and kids and schools to come in and see a glimpse of the beauty of nature and get to see baby lion cubs and a baby rhino and peacocks and all kinds of different critters that maybe they wouldn't get a chance to see in the wild. And we've surveyed our audience. We know they want to come to the zoo to have a fun, affordable day out. But while they're here, we want to help educate them about the environment and about wildlife populations, and most importantly, what everybody can do to save them. You know, actions that we can all take in our own lives that's going to make a difference to the environment and wildlife. And so Blank Park Zoo is a leader in conservation in many ways. First of all, we try to be as sustainable as we possibly can through our general operations. We've got worms that eat some of our garbage. We grow a lot of our produce on grounds, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. We also encourage our audience to be as green as possible. Go to the zoo's website and check out Stomp the Straw. It's a new campaign that we've just started to ask folks to sign a pledge to refuse single-use plastic straws at restaurants. There's also a place where restaurants can pledge that they're only going to offer straws upon request. That's because straws are estimated to be about 7% of all of the waste, the plastic waste in the ocean. So these personal behaviors really can affect wildlife. Of course, the backbone of what a zoo can do to save wildlife is the support, financially or in kind, of those field organizations, those individuals and groups that are in the range countries of the animals that we have here at the zoo working to save them. So a portion of every dollar that we make at the zoo goes to these organizations. So just by visiting the zoo, you're helping to save animals in the wild. And some examples are Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia, Chimpanzee Sanctuary and Wildlife Conservation Trust in Uganda, and Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand. So you can have some fun and do some good too at Blank Park Zoo. But I always say that if you want to get the most bang out of your buck, you should really work to take care of your local environment. And so, of course, we've got our Plant Grow Fly Pollinator Conservation Project. And over 1,000 gardens are registered with the project so far, and they span from single pots on back porches to entire prairie restorations, really giving room for those native plants to grow, which are important resources for pollinators, birds, mammals, and even humans. We've got our upcycle program where we remove invasive species from local parks. And just taking care of that local environment is something that is extremely important that we can all do. And so that's why when we were thinking about ideas for this show, we wanted to talk about local food because the way that we produce our food and the way that we consume and buy our food has a direct impact on our environment and local wildlife. And so, Gary, we want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
So, Gary, why don't you start out by just giving us a little background on yourself and where you're from and how you ended up with the Iowa Food Co-op.
Sure. I'm a native of Iowa. I grew up in northeast Iowa near Decorah, farmed as a child, farmed myself for a few years after we got through high school, but went to Iowa State in 1980, interested at that time very much in conservation, soil conservation. While I was there, I came to realize that the conservation of soils was really not what I was interested in so much as I was interested in the food that we're growing on it. And so I started to work for a nonprofit in the early 90s called Practical Farmers of Iowa. Worked for them for almost 20 years, but part of what we did there was try and figure out how to help the farmers who were growing really great foods find markets for those products. And so that effort involved trying to work with the existing food distribution system, which is, for example, the Fritos is a produce distributor. So we tried to work with the Fritos to get produce into the restaurants and grocery stores. After a frustrating series of years working with them, realizing that it wasn't a good match, we decided to create our own distribution system, which turned into the Iowa Food Cooperative. So basically, what we did was create a co-op that's both owned by its producer members and its consumer members that uses an online platform for the commerce that happens between these two parts of our co-op. So basically, we're a grocery store, but it's all online. Okay, so the producers stock the shelves themselves with the software. They put their products up for sale. They put them in the right shelves, hopefully. They price their products. They describe their products. And our consumer members can then choose from amongst these products that our producer members list based on what they're interested in. And it's all done online. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have a physical location because the products have to come to some place. So we do have a distribution center here in Des Moines on Franklin Avenue. So that's where the products will come in from the producers, and that's where our consumer members will come in and pick it up. And that's basically how it works. We also have other places for people to pick up in other communities where we have drop-off sites. So we're, right now we have 9 different locations where people can pick up their products. So
that is so interesting. And, you know, online shopping is all the rage right now, right? So it's kind of like a local Amazon for local food, and it sounds really handy. So basically, you're creating a framework to connect the dots of people who are growing the food and folks who want local food.
Yeah, it's, I consider it a platform for commerce. And it's owned by our members, which is really unique. They own the store, so to speak. So it's really something that I think they are invested in. At the current time, we have about 1,200 total members, and about 150 of those are our producer members who will list products and sell to our consumer members. You have to have grown it, raised it, or made it to sell it. So it's basically you're buying from an individual that you become familiar with based on your relationship and buying from them. They have to disclose information about their practices so you can make informed choices. And so, for example, this week we're doing one of our distributions, and we have 83 different producers that have sold products to our consumer members. And so going all the way from dairy and eggs, including milk, yogurt, cheese, goat cheese, through baked goods. We have like 7 bakers that are part of the co-op. They have made the products that they're selling. Through the fresh produce, eggs, honey. Bees are really important for the environment. So we have 4 honey producers that sell through us. And so we have prepared foods, frozen burritos, for example, things like this that are made in Iowa by the people that are selling them. So it's basically an alternative to the existing food distribution system that allows consumers to make informed choices and know who they're getting their products from.
And get to know the farmer or the person who is making that good, which is something that was much more common in the past. And I'm just imagining, how much my daughter and my family and I would love to know, where our food came from. Do folks ever get a chance to go to the farmer's, site and visit the farm and do tours?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, one of our board members has takes it upon herself to ride her motorcycle toward the different farms that are part of the co-op on her weekends to visit the people. I mean, the producers that are part of the co-op are excited to be able to show people what they're doing. And you don't have to necessarily go to their farm to learn about them, because you can actually read about them on the website, because every farm has a profile that describes what it is they're about, why they do what they do. And there's a lot of interaction that goes on. I mean, if you think about a regular grocery store and you go into the produce section and you point to something, you say, who's the producer that you got that from? They can't tell you that. Mm-hmm. They don't know. Everything is traceable to the farm that it came from through our co-op. So
And you talked about fruits and vegetables and eggs and cheese and baked goods. Are there any kind of out-of-the-box things that you can get through your co-op as well, non-food items?
I think the one, okay, yeah, there's some. I mean, fermented foods are really big right now. I mean, that's sort of, we pay attention to food, you know, trends in this country, and fermented foods are, which is things like sauerkraut and dill pickles, kimchi.
I'm getting hungry.
Kombucha tea. Those are, we have two different producers, for example, of sauerkraut, both from Iowa. Used to be that when people needed to figure out a way to store foods because they didn't have refrigeration, fermented foods were the way that a lot of that stuff was stored during the wintertime. And there's also a lot of health benefits from fermented foods, meaning probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
There are good germs in there for your body, and that's an example of something that's really unique. So there are others. I mean, we have like 8 different egg producers, so you have all different kinds of eggs options for us. They're all free range. They're all well cared for in terms of the kind of husbandry practices. So,
and what a great point. I know as a wildlife conservationist and animal lover, it's really important to me to know that any animal products that we're eating in our household, there's really great animal welfare and animal husbandry practices. So let's move into, let's talk about some multiple benefits of going through a co-op like this and eating local food.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned animal welfare, and that is huge amongst our members in terms of their kind of connection to the green world that we're all a part of. I mean, if you look at the dynamics, the types of people we have a lot of folks that I would call environmentalists. They tend to be a little older these days because they're getting older, but... For them, things like wildlife, water quality, species diversity or biodiversity in our landscapes, those kinds of things are really core to who they are as a person and what they care about. So our farms tend to be very small, tend to be quite diverse, and tend to utilize both animals and crops in a system where they work together. And so... we have a requirement that all of our producers disclose their practices as part of what they do. So people can learn exactly how these animals are treated, for example. That's huge. Another reason people belong to the co-op is for the sort of food safety aspect or the quality of the products. They want to be able to feed their families things that they can trust are going to be good for their health. And as well, there are certain parts of our membership that have certain dietary restrictions. So they have to have, like, a celiac disease. They have to have, or, you know, certain kinds of foods that they can trust that way. Another reason that we have amongst our members is the whole idea of economic vitality of a local community, being, you know, using the dollars that you spend on food that you eat 3 times a day to support a small business who is local and who is deserving of basically support from their own community. And that money stays local. It also turns over local. So it's not like even with a company like Whole Foods where you send your money to Austin, Texas, it stays in Iowa. And beyond that, I think there is this thing where people want their lives to matter. They want meaning to what they do. And in a world where it seems like everything has gone a little bit haywire, your food and who you get it from can give you a sense of purpose for what it is that you believe and how it is that you want it to behave. And so we have a lot of people that care deeply about this whole topic of how they're feeding their families and who they get it from. And it goes to an emotional level for a lot of them. And we're happy to be able to be part of that.
I love that. The smaller farmer has diverse things that they produce and grow, and that's a system. And the participants in your co-op are, you know, making sure that the farmers can make a living, and that's a system, and that's a community. And it just seems like it's a much more natural way for things to operate than perhaps these bigger corporate ways of getting food around. And I know, you know, as a conservationist myself, just the packaging that you see in a regular grocery store and all the single-use plastic is something that really is hard to avoid when you go to a traditional grocery store. And all of the carbon, I know that we ship our produce, especially just miles and miles and miles and across oceans, when there could be a farmer right down the road. I don't know if either of you have seen the picture on social media of a peeled orange inside a plastic container in a convenience store.
Just so you don't have to peel your own orange, huh?
If only nature would have just made a container to put around it, yeah. An orange, right? And a banana the same way. I mean, those things, just, you know, single-use plastic is having a huge direct impact on our environment and wildlife. And it's not just our marine and aquatic species, but it's species of all taxa. So that's one of the things that I love about this the most. We were part of a community-supported agriculture a couple years ago. And another thing that I really liked was that I had to get used to cooking some vegetables that I didn't usually buy at the grocery store. And what was really neat is we would go and meet these farmers in Prohl, because I live in Norwalk. And so we'd have to drive about 5 miles or so. But it was always neat to see what we got in our bag. And then they would put little recipe cards in there and give us ideas of what we could prepare.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I mean, one of our goals, I think, in terms of the co-op is to be able to feed ourselves year-round from local farms. You might think of it as food security. And so the extent to which we can sort of facilitate these small farms being able to be successful, I think of every one of them, and we have, like I said, close to 150 as a lifeline to the future. We're investing in them because 10, 15 years down the road, it may be imperative that they are around us, especially with things like the vulnerability of our energy supplies. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now it's looking good because we got all of this fracking stuff going on, but it's not going to last forever. Lifeline to the future is the way we think of it. And year-round is the other thing I want to say. I mean, we can do a really good job of feeding ourselves during the summer months because, you know, the bounty of our gardens, the bounty of our small farms. It's the wintertime when we have issues with regard to, you know, fresh produce. And so we're year-round, and we have 4 greenhouse growers that provide us fresh vegetables in the middle of the winter. And so the thing that we're trying to do, I think, is change the way we feed ourselves.
As far as scalability, you know, you have a certain number of people that are using your system right now. Are you able to scale up, like if you doubled, tripled, quadrupled your size? Are you able, would that be feasible, or is there sort of a limit to it?
It's scalable, but it's scalable with certain kind of investments that are going to be necessary in infrastructure. Right now, for example, I mentioned that we had the distribution this week. I think total sales by our producers is just a little over $17,000. We do it every other week, so that would mean about $34,000 in a month gets sold by producers. That's a pretty significant amount of money. To double it, it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible, but it takes an additional investment in the infrastructure. I think where we're trying to go with this entity that we've got is add enterprises that might fit better with what we're doing, like a local grocery store that's all Iowa Foods. That kind of thing might be, that's open 7 days a week. You know, those are the enterprises that might be easier for us to actually grow our entity than to try and, do $50,000 in a week's time. We would need a bigger space. But we can do it. I'm not saying we don't want to grow, but it's just something that takes some work. We can make money as an entity, with $500,000 in a year's time because our costs are pretty low. and almost all the money goes right to the producer as opposed to us. So it's not like we have to have $5 million in sales to make money. We can do it with $500,000, but we can grow. We've got room.
So all of these benefits are just fantastic for the people purchasing the food and for the folks that are producing it. But since we are talking about cost, how would you say the cost is compared to somebody went to a local grocery store and bought a week's worth of groceries or a certain amount of produce compared to going with the co-op?
On the produce side, we can be very competitive to what you would get in a normal grocery store. our producers are good. I mean, they're good at what they do. So the produce tends to be very competitive. When you get into the proteins, which are the meats, our producers' products are not like the products you will buy in a grocery store. They don't use the hormones in beef to encourage growth of the animals. They're primarily on the beef side, they're all grass-fed. And so when you take out grain as part of a ration, it increases the amount of time that that animal has to live or is living or is given the privilege to live, you might say, till it gets to harvest weight. And so the cost of doing it a different way is higher, which means that the product will cost you more than what you'll get in the store. But it isn't comparable product. Mm-hmm. That's what, I mean, the fact that it's a steak doesn't mean it's the same kind of steak you'll get in a store. And then on the baked goods, I think we're probably fairly competitive as well. Eggs are going to be a bit higher price because they are so darn cheap in a grocery store. I mean, I don't know how they can do it for like $1.25 mm-hmm. a dozen. Well, I know how they do it. They shove them into factories and they make them perform for them for the eggs. But mm-hmm. But our members don't seem to be too concerned about what it costs them to get the food. I think they care about who's getting the money and that they're paying for the food, and they also care about what that food, the features and the attributes of that food that they are buying it for. So,
can you tell us about a certain family farm or a certain producer that maybe has a neat story to tell?
There's so many. There's one up north of Ames, Lost Lake Farm. They're up by Jewell. It's an on-farm dairy. They make cheese from their dairy herd. And it's called Lost Lake Farm because basically the farm that they're on was at one point a lake up in the Prairie Pothole region that had been drained. I looked at an aerial photo from Google Maps earlier this spring of that particular farm in the middle of corn and soybeans up in the north central part of the state. And it was this bright splash of green in the middle of what was all tilled ground around it because it was being planted to corn and soybeans. That farm is treating its soil correctly because it's covered with grass, and they're using their animals to harvest the sun through the grass to create a product, which is a cheese, which is high quality, which then they are selling to us through the co-op. But what I want to say about that is that farm is a part of what we're trying to do to revitalize our rural communities as well as allow our urban residents the opportunity to buy good food. So that there's, like I say, we have over 100 and every one of them has a story. So that comes to mind. And it's mostly because people up there think that growing grass on that land is the wrong thing to do, but they're doing it. So,
and when you conduct your farm or the place that you produce these goods in that manner, it has so many multiple benefits for, like you said, for water quality and increased filtration and decreased runoff and something that's very close to my heart, pollinators. They'll be finding things to pollinate, and you can incorporate prairie strips and native plants, and it just makes a lot of sense for biodiversity. Is that right?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the number of acres in Iowa, of 75% of our land in Iowa is cropland used for crop growing, okay? That doesn't include pastures and timber. Of that 75% of our cropland, 91% of it is corn and soybeans. We have bankrupt our future in some ways by trying to grow these monocultures that are basically exported. And so we're using our soils, our sunlight, our water, our people for export crops. We can do better. And that's what we're about. We want to do better.
And they're virtual deserts for pollinators and other animals that need to find resources.
I imagine you don't have to worry about as much of commodity prices going up and down. It's more consistent, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, the thing that's unique about what we do is the farmers will set their prices. That's unheard of in a grocery store. Usually the buyer and the vendor, the farmer, are adversaries. In our situation, we don't have any adversarial relationships with our farmers. They list the products for what they need to get to make money. And so it's cool. I mean, if you want to charge that price, you know, this is what you need, then charge it. People pay it, too, because they want that producer to have a living. So
it's an inspirational story, and we just want to thank you for all the work that you're doing and bringing the communities together, feeding the kids healthy food, making sure that these small farmers can make a living while they're taking care of the land, supporting animals. I mean, it all goes together in this wonderfully woven story. How do people participate in the co-op, and how do they find out more?
The best way to do it is go to our website, iowafood.coop. It's not .com, it's .coop, and that's where you can learn about us. There is an online membership form that you can fill out right there on that website that will sign you up. There's an option for a trial membership, which gives you 6 months before you can actually before you have to decide if you want to become a member. So that would be why we would do it. We're virtual, so let's use it, okay?
Thank you so much for being here and for everything that you're doing for people and wildlife.
And thank you for what you do, too. So,
well, with all that talk of food, I think I'm hungry for lunch now. Well, that's all the time we have for today. And if you want to check out, again, the Iowa Food Co-op, it's iowafood.coop.
Exactly.
And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And you can enjoy all the interesting things that we have to offer on our website and learn about our events and new animals and baby animals and all sorts of things over at blankparkzoo.com. We'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.